Good morning. No, I don't want to say good morning. Hello, I'm Carol Gaines. I'm a Marine officer. Today's date is the 11th of March, 2020. We are in Las Cruces, New Mexico at KRWG. My interview partner today is Karen. We are military women together.
My name's Karen Woods. I'm here at KRWG here in Las Cruces, New Mexico. My interview partner is Carol Gaines, and she's one of my best friends.
Karen, you want to start off how military women, tell us about military women from a long ago until now.
Well, a lot of people don't realize that military women throughout our history have started actually in the Revolutionary War. In the Revolutionary War, women actually accompanied their husbands to war so they could do the typical things like mend, cook, wash dishes and all that, but they also accompanied men to war. And Molly Pritchard, she was with her husband, and he was in charge of with one of the cannons. He became questionable whether he was injured or became incapacitated. Then she took over his position at the cannon position and started firing. It continued on to the Civil War. Civil War is very important because Dr. Mary E. Walker, who was actually a physician, was with the Union. She was actually captured by the Confederate, and she served 4 months as a POW. And Dr. Walker is the only woman to have ever been awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor. And to continue on through, you have Korea, you have the Cold War. But as we have progressed through the years, shall we say, so has our functions within the military. And now to current day, if you will, is Iraq, Afghanistan. Women are now serving side by side with their male counterparts. And a lot of people don't want to realize that, but unfortunately we have lost females from combat.
Yes, we have. It's a sad time. Let's go back and review the history a little bit from World War I, World War II. Do you have any story about a woman in World War I?
Only World War I was when the women actually started being kind of active within the Army, because that was the predominant one at that time, and they served as nurses.
And there were some women called Marinettes, First World War, long skirts, big hats, and they were mostly administrative. There were probably some Navy nurses. Marines don't have medical, and so there were probably some Navy nurses who served at that time.
That's true.
But then we went on to World War II, and those are some of the women that are, at that time, stepped forward.
I agree with you. The ones we're about ready to talk about. We have had some personal relationships with our World War II women that we had, and some of them, they're quite comical at times.
I've lived in Las Cruces since 1971. My husband was a Marine. I'm a Marine. So we do a lot of military things, and I've helped women veterans over that time. And so many of the women, World War II, well, I didn't do anything. I served for 2 years, but I left home, and then little by little the stories came out of the things that they had done. Tell me what about one of the women that, one or two or three or four of the women that you've met.
Well, that's why we Carol, our organization made, we actually built the Woman Veterans Monument for us, the United Military Women of the Southwest. This is because we have heard so many stories, it would just seem that we had to get this done. We had to tell the story and let the monument speak for itself.
And they weren't just stories. They were actual events that these women did, that they were involved in.
Well, is when you talk to some of these women, and they actually fought in some ways to get into the service.
One of the women that I talked with, Daddy says, no. Mama says, no. She didn't go. The next dad said to his wife, if darling daughter wants to go and her brothers went, if she wants to go, she can go. Come here, daughter, I'll sign your paper.
Well.
And the next one said, if my brother can go, no, you can't go. Another dad said, if the boys can go, you can go. And others never went. So it was an interesting time for them, but they were patriotic. They had love of country. They wanted to serve as much as they could.
I'll take off on that patriotic is when I was talking with Lily Fitchue. There was this big push with the Veterans Affair to get all women registered now so they could receive their benefits. And Lily told me, what's the big deal? I said, well, it's a big push is on. She said, no. And I said, well, you were World War II. She said, yes. She said, Karen, but you don't realize. The thing that stuck with me, she told me, she says, we weren't at war. Our country was at war, and we did what we had to at that time. So, I mean, that kind of sets you back, especially nowadays. And Lily actually was on the lead team for General MacArthur, and she landed in the Philippines. Being the lead team means you set up for General to come so he can conduct his business. And so she was evidently stepping over dead bodies to make all preparations for the General to come. And it wasn't until the eulogy that we kind of realized that she had been awarded the Bronze Star. And she didn't ever talk about it, but that's the attitude of women, period.
And it was unheard of for a woman to be presented with a Bronze Star because you had to be in battle and really do something brave.
Well, she met that criteria because
yes, she did.
She was in a battle zone, but she never talked about it. And then there was these women that, Miss Olson.
I can't remember her first name, though.
No, neither can I, but she told me that she got one of her friends to come up, and they went to New York to the federal building, and they were walking up some stairs. And then as they were walking up the stairs, they heard God Bless America be sung. And it was sung by no one else but Kate Smith.
Oh, an icon.
Kate Smith is quite an icon. And you hear these various stories that they tell, and it's not written down anywhere, and it's now since they're gone, it's up to you and I, Carol, to help, you know, put this down as on record.
And I'm pleased and proud to be here. I have to tell you about another one. We had some feisty women there, nice to say, and this Army man, I don't know what rank, probably senior to her. There were no women in London. There were no women in Paris. You don't know what you're talking about. So she gets out her little picture book and she says, there's one. Where were you? I was in London. Oh, no, I was in London. And then she told the story. We were about 40 women in London, but we could not travel together. We could not live together because they were, in quote, with the name at the time, now would be called intelligence. They could not be in the same place because if something would happen and they would all get killed at the same time, they would lose so much. We would lose all contact. So then they wore dark coats to work. When they got to work, then they put their uniform on. And one of the items that made her the most proud was the field commanders came in and they talked to her. And she was taking it down, tap and tap. And she said, I knew what was going on in the war front before Mr. President did. I knew what was going on before the War Department did. Don't tell me I wasn't there. And then I got a transfer to Paris. And she thought, oh, Paris, I'm going to Paris. Well, it turns out she was so busy working, she hardly had time to visit Paris. But she came back with wonderful memories, more than some of the other men, Army men who came. And they maybe worked at an office, or maybe they worked in supply, or maybe they worked in the machine shop. But she was out on the front.
Good for her. Well, I don't know if you remember, we had two World War II veterans that were sisters.
Oh, yes.
You remember those?
Looked so different, but they were sisters.
One was in the Navy, and the other one was in Army because she was an Army nurse. Can you remember their names? Because I sure don't.
One was Robbie Lee Scott, was an Army nurse. And she was in World War II and Korea and Vietnam. I visit her gravesite. She lived almost to 100, and she is now buried at Fort Bliss. And I stop and visit at her gravesite.
Well, you remember...
Remember her sister, Rose?
Well, remember that time we had them both together, and we were doing a flag ceremony, and we were presenting flags to them. Well, you gave Rose hers, and I gave Robbie mine. And Robbie had a was having a real bad day that day. And Robbie had been stationed aboard a ship that they had to do an abandoned ship. So she was a true nurse. She really
wow.
was. Well, when I was presenting her flag, but like I said, she was having a real bad day, and she hadn't spoke at all. So when I gave her her flag, and the only thing that she told me, and she looked in my eyes, and she says, I remember them all. I had no comeback for that, and I just didn't have a comeback. But to be in the presence of women like this, and for Robbie, exactly, when she told me that, it set me back on my heels.
Well, and then she was the one, maybe a little hard exterior sometime. When you're a nurse, you see so many things that you wish you could help. She said, Rose and I grew up together in the same room. We each went our way into the service. We both came home. She stayed single. Her sister married. Husbands had died. Children were far away. And now they were in a nursing home back in the same room together.
That's quite a feat.
And one of my other favorite stories, in Las Cruces and across the nation, we have a program called Honor Flight. Wherever the veterans are, the community takes care of fundraising to send those military men, women back to World War II and other monuments to see in Washington, D.C. Early on, they called it Mission 2, we had six women go together. They called them the six-pack because those six women traveled together. And they traded stories. No wonder these women were all different branches of the service, Army, Marine, Navy. I don't think we had any Coast Guard then. But they traded stories. That's what I did. What'd you do? Oh, that's what I did. Oh, and they traded stories. Have a wonderful time. Washington, D.C., there is a monument dedicated entirely to women in the military called Women in Military Service for America. And they are all now enrolled in that program. You can look them up online. We had Eve Stream. We had Tabby Theodore, Elizabeth Anderson, Julie Smith, Harriet Pinnock, and Marion Nygaard. And they were all services. And they each had a story to tell. And if we had an hour's time, we could tell a little bit about each one. What a fun time. And those women stepped forward. They gave the inspiration for me to join.
Well, continuing on that, remember the time we had a Women's History Month over at White Sands? So we gathered them all
yes.
up, and we took them over to White Sands.
And they all wore yellow Honor Flight jackets.
Well, they had that guest speaker who had a PhD, so I don't remember the doctor's name. She was going to tell us about women history. And I hesitated for a moment, and then... I said, well, you know what? You can talk about the history all you want to. I brought mine. So I had about six World War II women over there. And what made it even better is the general at the time was a female. And they were sitting down. She made an effort to go and shake each one of their hands. And when she shook her hand, they did the traditional challenge coin toss where she put her challenge coin in her hand. You shake the person and you just the challenge coin was in the recipient's hands. And the command sergeant major turned around and looked at me, and he said, Karen, she said, she's got a challenge coin. And I said, well, yeah. And he says, I didn't even know she had them. I don't have one.
Wow.
So, you know, I was just gleaming from ear to ear. They gave me so much bragging rights at that particular moment. And it's just, but to spend that time, that quality time that we had with them, it speaks volumes.
And all those volumes need to be written down. I got to tell you one more story.
Sure.
So in meeting the women veterans here, I met this kind of a tall, stately-looking woman. Would tell you a joke, and be straight-faced, and all of a sudden you realize, she just pulled my leg all the way down the street. So this is Lee Judkins. I have a little note here so I keep track exactly. And she said, well, I was stationed in the Navy, San Diego Naval Base in 1947. My job was a storekeeper. I was to reconcile all the inventory records for the whole base. Inventory was taken on a year-round basis by class of items. I don't know what class of items. you do, Karen, the Navy. Listed on the inventory were two locomotives. One was accounted for on the base, but not the other one. Where was it? How long had it been on mission? How could you lose a locomotive? I was responsible for the inventory. I was going to find that locomotive. I was diligent by researching and tracing that paper trail into the past and the far past. The locomotive was finally located in Tijuana, Mexico. The trains had access between the two countries to carry special loads and supplies back and forth. Mexico did a lot of iron work. Navy needed help with iron work. The locomotive was awaiting another load in Mexico to the United States, but somehow the track never came back because the Mexicans were using it. But she found it, and it was returned. Good for you, Lee. Inventory record was successfully completed. I did a check mark and put my initials on it. Leave it to Lee. What if, you know, if you're going to be dedicated, she was. And she left me with a picture of herself in Navy uniform. I wish I could show you that picture. Your turn for a story.
Okay, I'm trying to up that.
Keep going, keep going.
Well, I can tell you that the military has made very much headway.
Oh, yes.
So I joined in 74, and we said, well, women are not treated, but this is where the environment, which when you and I joined, I went to a school that was open to men, open to women. Then after the war, they shut it down. But then when I went in, they had just opened it again. So after boot camp, you know, you've been freshly brainwashed and you were told to make a good impression, show up to your duty station early. So that's exactly what I did, because I definitely want to make a good impression. So I started checking in on the command down there in Pensacola, Florida. And within a couple hours, I'm standing in front of the executive officer trying to answer questions. I just stepped on the base, and I just had that distinct privilege. And the first words to come out of his mouth were, "Do you know what you've done to me?" Well, I'm an E1 talking to an O5, and I'm going, "No, sir, I do not. And he says, "I have accommodations for 73 young ladies. Do you know what number you are?" "No, sir, I don't." "You're number 74.
Whoa, you made it.
Oh, I made it quite the impression, trust me.
Well, as a Marine, when you stand on the yellow footprints,
you held the
task. You stepped off of them.
Well, that night I got to occupy a barracks just by myself. I was so special.
Were you lonesome? Or a little scared?
I was still scared at that point.
I have one more story that I have to share about a woman Marine. Her name was Ruth Kennan, Ruth Truax Kennan from, I can't remember where, Ohio. She joined the Marine Corps in 1942. Women Marines came in 42, 43. Women, we received so many women into the military, and she said, "I had been to business school, but that was so ordinary. So I joined the Marines, went to boot camp. I went to Marine Air Base at Cherry Point, North Carolina. Didn't know where that was either. The classification officer asked me if I was interested in working as a control tower operator. I didn't know what tower operator did. Didn't know anything much about airplanes. So I went to school at the Navy Air Base near Atlanta, Georgia, of 3 months of really tough training. I came back to Cherry Point, and I was sent to a small outlying air base where you had mostly gull-wing Corsairs. Good airplane. They asked me for, "Did you have any interesting experiences while you were there?" "Here's one," she said. "Squadrons of planes were landing as fast as possible to get on the ground before an approaching storm hit. We're using runway 18. Suddenly, I was aware of another plane on runway 36. No time for a committee meeting. I guess I sounded calm, but my knees were shaking as I directed over the microphone, 'Plane landing, wave off. Plane landing, take a wave off.' Repeated until I saw both planes pull up, avoiding a clash. I didn't know then, but I found out later, I had just waved off the commanding general of the base." He was in danger. I kept him alive. I mean, what a responsibility when you've had only a few months of control operator tower experience. She made her mark.
Well, another woman that, World War II lady, but she was, that was Betty Sompe.
Oh, Betty, my girl.
Well, she joined the Army, well, not directly, but indirectly she did, but she was a WAAC.
Women's Army Auxiliary Corps.
So that was before the Army officially accepted women, and then they reverted to WAC.
Women's Army Corps.
So Betty had several stories, and since, you know, they weren't, it will have accepted in the military by the men, we had a very strange event. Most commanding officers would, I don't want women on my station. And this other commanding officer says, I'll take them all. Because you got to remember, during World War II, everything was rationed. So that commanding officer was really smart because the things that were strange, they didn't have a lot of, it was toilet paper. So he knew if he had women on his station that he had all the toilet paper that he needed. So,
and now we're collecting toilet paper again because we're having a problem with the virus in the United States.
Well, Betty continues on and talking to her throughout the years. One of the questions that she was asked, Betty, do you think women should go into combat? And there was no hesitation. She said yes. And she says, as long as we get trained and go through the procedures of the guy, we should have a different voice. We came in here to protect our country, and we do what we have to do. So that's strange. But I can tell you, after the monument was built, the Women Veterans Monument was built here in Las Cruces, it was done on, the dedication was done on May 10th, 2018. And 9 days later, Betty passed away.
Oh, what is this sad day. She helped us on the committee. She lived through the dedication.
Well, Betty was 102 years old when she passed away.
I miss her to this day.
Yes, I do. But what an impact she had through us all.
I want to be like her.
Well, you know, I talked about that general that was over in White Sands. Well, Betty was having her 98th birthday. So we actually, some of us got together, if you remember. You were part of that.
I do.
We went to the place where we could all afford, you know. You remember Corral?
Yes.
Golden Corral?
Oh, yes.
Well, we went all out that day, so we were sitting there, and the general couldn't be there personally, so she said she would call. So when my cell phone went off, I was able to hand Betty the phone, and I said, this one's for you, Betty. And she kind of looked at me strange, so I handed her the cell phone, and it was the general on the other line wishing her a happy birthday. And after she hung up, and just a few seconds later, she says, Karen, I can't believe that. A general actually called me. Karen, a general, she called me to wish me a happy birthday. I said, well, yeah, she did.
You're worth it, Betty.
You're worth it.
Well, after we've gone so much with World War II, there was a time from 1947 till 1990 that was called the Cold War. Even though during that time we had the hot war at Korea, there were bullets flying. A few years later we had Vietnam, more bullets were flying, but it was still considered the Cold War. Do you know anybody who was Korean era?
The only one that comes to mind is the lady that was here locally, and her name's Mary Taylor. And Mary Taylor was, I believe she was a sergeant.
Army.
Well, she worked in CID.
Oh.
CID is, for people who know, it's the Navy's, and everybody knows what NCIS is.
Intelligence.
So, investigations.
And more, investigation, even more.
And therefore, anybody knows that you're under investigation from CID, excuse me, or the Naval Intelligence, something seriously happened, because they got a lot of power. Well, she was at a Korean War. I took her to a Korean War memorial that was happening. Well, the same general was there, and here comes the command sergeant major again. And they had no idea what she had done during the war, or Korean War. So and I said, Sergeant Major, why don't you just walk on over there and ask her what she did? And he looked at me, and I said, no, go ahead and ask her. And she said, well, I was CID. And he started going, whoa, and he just started doing the back step, going all the way back. Well, I don't want nothing to do with you. And the general was over there just laughing. So I got another dig on him.
Women did so many things in the background that we don't know, but they were there. On to Vietnam. Vietnam, this is now, it's almost 75 years, or I think it is 75 years now since Vietnam. There were Army nurses there, I know. There were Navy nurses there. Army had some women there. In my command, I had one woman who went as a woman Marine, probably in supply. But no, that's not what she did. That's not what she really did. But you couldn't say that out loud. But she was there. She came back. I saw her once after, many years later. She wore Vietnam-era ribbons, which you wear when you're in country.
Women have done a lot of strange things, but it's always been done behind the scenes. As you can see, you can never talk about it, but they were there, and you know they were there. So, and you know, there's that conflict that, again, you always talk about Agent Orange. And everybody, early on after Vietnam, they were always saying, well, Agent Orange, it was here, whatever it is. But we had actually had one of our women veterans, Margaret Gould.
Oh, yes.
And she served over there, and she's actually a recipient of Agent Orange, but she, to the day she died, did not ever get compensated for that. And that spoke volumes, but she fought to the day. What a fighter. But she fought to the day that she passed away.
And now, finally, the VA has come. If you were in Vietnam, you were automatically now considered
in country
disabled, that you could get benefits. And unfortunately, too many of them went by. Didn't know, because I only went in for a little while. I didn't know I really got benefits, and some of them finally now had medical benefits. They could buy a house. They could go to school. They helped their children, grandchildren. And so women serve. Women served.
Well, it's like now it's kind of even aboard ship. And that's, to this day, women now do serve aboard combatants, which when I joined, you could not do that.
Could you even be on a ship?
Yeah, you could, but not a combatant. Mm. But if you just happened to go into a conflicted area, their first objective was to get you off of that ship. You could not do that.
And then, who was supposed to do your job? It didn't get done.
Just did not get done. It's amazing, huh?
Isn't it, though? Well, I think women have always served, whether they're serving their families, they're serving their communities. They're patriotic. They had love of country. They deserve to be out fighting, whether it was on the front line, whether it was doing a victory garden, Rosie the Riveter, all of the things that brought women forward. And I think now we're finally recognizing, and the women who are serving now are serving, truly serving.
Well, they're now in the limelight. They're not behind the scenes.
Yes.
And that's the problem.
That was the problem.
And if you look at it, but again, we women do not, I guess, brag about ourselves because our priorities were different. When you got out of the military, you were either wanted to get married and have get a husband, and some of you wanted to have a family with, and you had children. So you being in the service, you didn't talk about it because your priority was number one, your husband and your family. And that's all that mattered.
Sometimes I feel like a woman with a past.
Yes, but and some of them just don't want to talk about it, period, just like some of the guys. They don't talk about it at all.
Well, either way, we're still sometimes at war. We have been now in the Middle East for a long time, and women are now on the front. Women have always served. They're serving now, and we welcome those who come in the future. Women will still step forward. Women have a strong inner core. We'll still be there.
Well, the strong core, as you say, we've actually had one of the oldest women. She was in the Army, but she wanted to join the Marine Corps. She was from she was a Navajo Indian.
Oh, yes.
And she actually wanted to join the Corps because she heard about the Navajo code talkers. And she was turned down by the Marines, so she said, heck with that. And she joined the Army. So she stayed with the Army, but...
Was she World War II era?
Yes, she was.
World War II.
And she was also a WAAC.
Oh.
But, again, she was a Native American. But, unfortunately, Sophie Yazzie had just recently passed mm-hmm. away, and she was 105 years old.
Wow.
Can you imagine that?
Can you think of the things that have gone on in her past? All the things she has seen?
Well, when you get to talk with people like that, and she's so humble. She was so humble. And I talked with her when she was 103. And she was so humble. And it's... But we get to talk to just recently. We have, in our midst, we have Shoshana Johnson. You talk about recent conflicts. Shoshana was one of the first women captured in Iraq and held POW. And that's one of the ones that they went and got. But they talk about Shoshana, but they should also, there was a Native American that was killed. And she's buried in Tuba, Arizona. At 23 years old, she left behind two children. So it's very real. It is very, very real. And we should give recognition for all those women who have not only passed away and given us history, but have paid the ultimate sacrifice. At 23 years old, it's whatever it is.
Well, it's interesting at the time, if she had two children, she probably had to sign them off to her husband or to her family who would take care of them, because at the time, I don't know if they were allowed to have children. When I was in, if you were pregnant or had children, you could not join. You were out. It has changed now, but in her era, I don't know. Anyway, it's been fun talking.
Well, yes, it has,
Carol.
I
like the sharing of stories.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
You guys were talking earlier about some of how women were told to be women first.
Yes.
Before they were service people.
You learned to look well. You learned to put your makeup on. And I even... when you got your uniform issue, you also always issued a purse. I still have some of my original uniforms that I was issued. Actually, as an officer, I had to buy mine, and yes, they were expensive. But in matter, we went from brown shoes to black shoes, brown purse to black purse. But I was very proper. That's what you did, and you wore them every day.
Well, we had a personnel inspection. That purse was not exactly liked. So one of my wise decisions of my commanding officer during the inspection of his women, he wanted to have them inspected with their purse. And all the women are looking around, do you have that? I don't have mine. Well, she'll go first, and you give me your purse, and I'll take on for the second one. Okay, so we were all looking for purses because nobody extra carried that thing because it was so ugly.
Yes, they were.
Ugly is not the word, but it was kind of, I didn't want to even possess the commanding officer to want purses. That would be about as bad as putting gloves on. You were issued black gloves too?
I was issued black gloves too. Wonderful leather, expensive gloves. And I even had a calling card. And when you were all as an officer, you were invited to the commanding officer's home for a tea or for a lunch. And they had a tray as you came in the door that had a tray for calling card. So I think I have three of them just that I kept them because. But later I decided now I don't call them calling cards anymore, but I call them business cards. So I went to visit our son who lives in Austin, and I wanted to go, to go to the governor's house. So when we went to the governor's house, there was a tray at the front door. So I kept my little card, I signed my name, and I made, it was the time of a book fair, it was Laura Bush that I was liked very much. She was a high school librarian. So I put on my little card, thank you for promoting reading. And I wrote my name on it. And of course, the calling card did have my name and address. So I have a card, an answer to my calling card from Laura Bush. So there were good things and that came through from all of those things. Yes, you learn to be quite proper, but there's a time to do that, and there's a time to live real life. And that's what we did.
Well, I want to finish with one story, last story. I had never been on a plane before. So when I joined the Navy, I got my first plane ride, and I got to go down from Illinois. I got to go to Orlando, Florida.
Whoa.
So here we're picked up in the bus. You're all put in the bus, and then you're taken to the recruiting station or the whatever you called it that time. Unfortunately, they lost my luggage.
Oh.
That was not good. So I'm standing there getting some special attention by the commander herself. And her name, I remember it, Captain Gore. And I'm looking around, and you could swear to God, you could see her lips before that, because that had that really bright red lipstick on.
Oh, we wore red lipstick.
And so that was my introduction to the Navy. And introduction to the Navy, get off the bulkhead. Okay, well, look around. What the heck is a bulkhead?
You soon learned.
Soon learned that day.
So the Navy took me on a trip, too. I was stationed in Washington, D.C. at the time, had my good lady friend who was in the Navy, and she said, we've been invited to go on a submarine. Yeah, let's go. So we came in our casual, what I called fatigues at the time. No, we didn't call them fatigues. What did we call them? We called them, I don't know, I can't remember, too long ago, ready to go on the submarine. So I'm happy to say we went down, we went up, we went down, we went up, and it was full of midshipmen for the summer. And the midshipman that I met was Charles Krulak. I remember the now because he later became commandant of the Marine Corps. He was head of the Marine Corps, and I thought, I remember you when.
Well, we had a department and a division department head. He says, what can I do for you girls? We want to go on board a submarine. So he did. Well, you got to remember, we're a bunch of cryptologists. So you have to cross decks to go to the submarine. So we're just marine there bound. Of course, you got a salute and everything. Here we are, just gather about, and he's just going. He's just hiding his head in shame. So we went through the gangplank, and here we're going down in the submarine. And some of the crew was still there. Well, that's a fantastic thing because now they got women on submarines. So we're trying to go through, and we're pointing out, what's this? What's that? What's this? What's that? And it was a very interesting trip, but my department had the best time of his life at that point, taking women aboard submarines during that time. It was amazing. You get to see all the silos where the missiles were and everything.
Well, it's time to close it off. So, yes, Karen, I wish you fair winds and following seas.
Well, Carol, semper fi.
Oorah.
Oorah. Thank you.